Joseph fought to stay awake and remain upright in the saddle of his horse. The bounty hunter had left the village almost as soon as they had met. They were riding south, despite Joseph's words of protest. After their talk in the stable, Brunner had become silent. Not a word had passed between them in all the long miles they had covered since the morning sun had faded into darkness. Whether the bounty hunter was in some foul mood, or whether his mind was lost in thought, the youth could not decide. Joseph had long ago resolved to stop trying to disrupt the killer's silence. Abruptly, a dark expanse rose ominously before them, stretching as far as Joseph's eyes could see. A forest rose from the expanse of meadows and fields like a living wall. Joseph could see small dark objects scattered between the edge of the forest and the meadowland. In the darkness, he could not decide if they were merely boulders or something of design, monuments or cairns, perhaps. Joseph's horse stopped as Brunner brought his own animals to a halt. Joseph rubbed his eyes, trying to force awareness into his mind. Without a word to the youth, Brunner swung his leg over the horn of his saddle and dropped to the grassy ground. Somewhere in the night, an owl hooted. Brunner strode forward, advancing toward the dark boulders. Joseph wondered idly if he should follow the bounty hunter, but decided that in his state he would be more likely to fall in a hole than be of any assistance. For a moment, alarm raced through his fatigued frame. Fear that a horde of beastmen and goblins might erupt from the dark expanse of the trees. But the fear quickly died away. As tired as he was, Joseph could not care less. His head sagged forward, his chin resting on his chest. A moment later, the boy slipped into a half-sleep. Brunner made his way through the old standing stones, not pausing to consider the curious markings that had been burned into the rock. Instead, he bent down to gather some small white pebbles. When he had a fistful of the small stones, he began to clear a small patch of ground by kicking rocks and twigs away with his boot. He crouched down, carefully arranging the small pebbles on the ground. Then he stood up again and stared down at a design he had marked out with the stones. He looked up, his icy eyes considering the dark, brooding shadow of the forest. Then he turned and walked back to Joseph and the horses. Brunner climbed back into Fien's saddle and reached a gloved hand over to shake Joseph back into a semblance of wakefulness.
What?
The youth spluttered. "We are done here," the bounty hunter stated. "If we make good time, we can be at Hausstratte's inn for the night. Not the best, but better than sleeping under the light of Morsleib." Joseph did not argue. He merely indicated with a tired wave of his hand for the bounty hunter to lead the way. Soon, all three horses were moving down the dirt road at something approaching a run. Behind them, in the shadows of the forest, an owl hooted its cry into the night. Joseph followed Brunner into the dark coaching inn, a battered, faded wooden sign proclaiming it to be Le Canard Étrangle. A large, two-storied building, the inn was protected by a tall stone wall, a fortification absent in many of Bretonnian's villages and townships. The inn served travelers on business and those on pious devotion, and there were enough itinerant peddlers and pilgrims wishing to view the sites where the Grail was seen to keep René Hausstratte a busy and very prosperous man. Even at this late hour, the coaching inn was far from deserted, its guests far from asleep. A pair of Bretonnian knights with colorful surcoats covering their suits of mail were seated at one table, their loud, boasting voices carried across the room. A pair of green-garbed squires, their dark hair cut in the bowl shape favored by the common folk of Bretonnia, hastened to ensure that the two knights' tankards never went dry. they constantly fetched fresh pitchers of ale, as the lords drained the old ones dry. A wiry-looking man, with a face cast in a perpetual scowl, slowly sipped at a mug of ale, while idly toying with a small tin box he had removed from the bulging pack at his side. Brunner strode to the counter, ordering a tankard of ale, when he discovered that Imperial Schnapps was not to be had. Joseph joined him, placing his own order that a pleasant-mannered barkeep was happy to meet when he saw the youth's coin. Joseph turned his back to the counter, mimicking the bounty hunter's movements. His eyes also canvassed the room, studying every face. Joseph did not know what he was looking for. Then it suddenly occurred to him what his companion might be hoping to see. A face, a scar, a peculiarity of dress that might identify an outlaw to the bounty hunter's elephant-like memory. Joseph continued to study the other denizens of this common room, then caught his breath. Seated at a table, at the back of the room was a tall, slender figure, garbed in a dull, green cloak. Joseph could make out the pale skin under the hood of the cloak. The hands were folded beneath the table, though Joseph could not tell if they held a blade or not. A leather jack of ale sat on the table, but the silent figure did not seem interested in it. Joseph leaned forward, trying to see if the lower half of the cloaked figure's face was covered. A gloved hand pressed against his chest and pushed him back. "Easy," the bounty hunter's voice hissed. "Turn around and enjoy your drink." The bounty hunter turned round to face the counter, and Joseph followed his lead. "Now, I'm going to take the dagger and go have a talk with our friend over there." Joseph could feel the bounty hunter's hand take the covered weapon from where he had thrust it through his belt. "Just stay here. I'll be right back." From the corner of his eye, Joseph saw Brunner walk across the room, nimbly dodging the two squires racing past to secure another pitcher for their drunken lords. He headed straight toward the table where the sinister figure was seated. Joseph could see that the bounty hunter's gloved hand rested lightly upon the hilt of his sword, but he wondered just how loose that grip really was. The figure did not stir as Brunner sat opposite him. Joseph could see Brunner's lips moving, but no trace of a whisper managed to fight its way back to him over the boisterous nights. He watched Brunner speak, and had the impression that a cloaked figure was also conversing. Then the bounty hunter withdrew the wrapped dagger. With careful, deliberate gestures, Brunner removed the blade from its cloth covering and then its leather scabbard. The cloaked figure leaned forward. Two thin, pale hands closed about the weapon and pulled the blade towards him. The stranger stared down at the dagger, turning it around and around in its hands. The head rose again, and Joseph could see Brunner voicing a reply to some question. Then, long inhuman fingers carefully returned the dagger to its sheath and wrapped the cloth around it once again. The cloaked figure hesitated a moment, and Joseph could see the bounty hunter speak with violence. Slowly the hooded head nodded and pushed the dagger back into the bounty hunter's care. Brunner rose from the table and made his way back to the bar.
"What was that about?" Joseph asked. "Was he an elf, like the other one?"
Brunner stared at his young companion.
"We'll get rooms here tonight. Continue on in the morning for Paravon."
The bounty hunter lifted his neglected tankard and drank deeply.
"But who was that?"
Joseph turned to indicate the cloaked figure, but as he looked, he saw the table was now empty.
"Someone who answered a question for me," Brunner replied, "though he was not very happy about it."
The bounty hunter drained his last dregs of ale and would say no more about the man in the green cloak. Joseph rolled over, clenching the coarse wool blanket still tighter about his body, trying to defend himself against the chill morning dew. A booted heel pushed the boy onto his back. He spluttered into a dim sort of awareness, snapping his bleary head about in a series of quick side-to-side motions. The man who had awakened him strode away to examine the harness on his war horse.
"Learn to sleep more lightly," Brunner called to the boy, "or you might not wake up at all."
Joseph emerged from under the blanket and wiped the dirt and grass from his clothing. "It is a wonder I was able to sleep at all," he groused. He looked about, not seeing any signs of a fire. The boy sighed and walked over to his pack, removing his belt and weapons. "No breakfast today either?"
"If you wanted breakfast, you should have stayed at the inn,"
the bounty hunter reminded him. He had tried to impress upon the boy that he should forsake continuing his little quest for revenge and allow the bounty hunter to continue unimpeded. But Joseph was not about to listen to such talk, however valid Brunner's arguments might have been. Joseph had a suspicion that the hired killer was not really eager to lose him either, though what use the killer intended to put him to, Joseph could not hazard to guess. It had been a long, hard ride from the inn. They had been on the road 2 days now, heading northward. Before them, like a distant shadow, the dark peaks of the gray mountains steadily grew larger and more imposing. To their right, the vast expanse of the Forest of Loren edged to the road itself. It was a dark, forbidding mass of greenery, whose branches and leaves permitted not even the slightest glimpse of what might lie within. Joseph could not put the vast forest from his mind, imagining all sorts of nameless things watching from the shadows. Each night they had camped under the stars. The bounty hunter had slipped into sleep almost as soon as they made camp. He attended to his horses as if he was not troubled in the slightest by the nearness of the forest and the fell creatures that might be lurking within. For Joseph, however, sleep was much more elusive, and he spent hours watching the shadows, listening to the rustle of brush, the calls of night birds, and the chirping of insects. Only when fatigue at last dulled his weary senses would he finally sink into a fitful sleep.
"We should reach Paravan today," Brunner said. "By early afternoon, if the Viscount's nag can keep up the pace."
"What is in Paravan?" Joseph asked, thrusting the wrapped dagger into his belt.
A friend," the bounty hunter said, after a pause. He faced Joseph, staring into the boy's eyes. "Someone who might be able to tell us a bit more about this Black Prince of yours."
Suddenly, Brunner spun around, his left hand gripping the pistol, his right hand closed about the hilt of his drawn sword.
"If I intended to kill you," a soft voice said, "you would have never seen the morning."
Joseph watched in amazement as a tall, thin figure appeared from behind a patch of berry bushes. The figure was garbed in a long green cloak, but this time the hood was drawn back, exposing a fine-featured face with a long, sharp nose, a high brow, and thin eyes. Long, flowing gold hair cascaded about the figure's shoulders. Joseph could see that a slender sword, with a hilt of polished horn, was sheathed at the figure's side, and the stranger was carrying a curved bow of the same white wood the bounty hunter had shown him when they met. The elf wore a tunic and breeches of fine, smooth brown leather, a fur-lined quiver hanging from his side by a shoulder strap.
"Litheline," Brunner said, keeping his weapons at the ready. "I can hardly say that I am surprised to see you. You will forgive me if I remain suspicious."
The wood elf smiled, an expression that seemed subtly mocking and haughty.
I am afraid that you have more pressing concerns, the elf said, his voice retaining its soft tone. Your steps have been dogged by more than myself. 5 riders have been on your trail for the past day and a half.
Would you care to elaborate?
Brunner asked, keeping his pistol trained on the elf's forehead. I should be very foolish if I did that without compensation,
Liffeline responded. I am not giving up that dagger, or my chance at the Black Prince,
the bounty hunter snarled.
Brunner's words caused Joseph to clutch the wrapped dagger more closely and draw his own sword. He ignored the fact that the bounty hunter seemed to consider the dagger his own property and concentrated on the suggestion that the elf had come to take it.
Of what matter is he to you?
The elf's voice had a harsh, angry quality to it now.
For you he is just another bounty, but to me he is a matter of honor, a slight upon my race.
For me, he is enough gold to choke a dwarf, the bounty hunter corrected. If you think I am going to give that up, you've been out of the business for too long. Brunner's mouth twisted into a sneer. Don't worry, I'll bring proof to you that he is dead, after I collect the reward.
Liffeline sighed, but the tenseness in his posture seemed to wilt away. As the elf relaxed, Brunner became more wary. You may keep your filthy blood money, Brunner, the elf said, but it will be my hand that slays him. There was no mistaking the fret in the soft, musical voice.
Are you proposing a partnership? Brunner asked.
Wait, protested Joseph. That bastard is mine to kill. The bounty hunter and the elf considered the angry merchant for a moment, then both let a brief flare of amusement flicker across their faces. Brunner holstered his weapons.
He does have a prior claim, the bounty hunter said. You'll have to wait your turn.
Liffeline looked intently at Joseph, his copper-hued eyes considering the young boy. The elf's graceful features shifted into a look of sadness. I admire your determination, he said, but there is enough innocent blood on the Black Prince's hands already. Joseph began to voice an angry protest to tell this arrogant non-human creature that when he met the Black Prince, it would be the villain, not he, who would fall. But Liffeline had already turned his attention back to Brunner. These riders, they should catch up to you in another few hours, the elf stated.
I don't like being hunted, Brunner said. I think we should wait for our pursuers, maybe turn the tables on them, perhaps ambush them on the edge of Grimfen.
The bounty hunter paused again, considering his options.
Do you have any idea who they might be?
The wood elf shook his head. I only saw them from a great distance, Liffeline admitted. I could only tell that they were following you.
Brunner nodded as the elf spoke. Well, I think this time you will get a better look at them.
The three men crouched amongst the rocky rubble of a wall. 50 years ago, the local duke had tried to make this section of the road between Kennel and Paravon a toll road. The terrain was ideally suited for his purposes. To the east, the impenetrable and vast expanse of the Forest of Loren loomed an intimidating barrier to travel, a haunted land populated by all manner of fey creatures by the imaginations of the Bretonian people. To the west, for several miles, the gently rolling landscape sank into a deep depression, the meadows and fields giving way to a foul, stinking morass known as Grim Fen. The morass was a bowl of mud and twisted, stunted trees. Small wooded islands dotted the dismal swamp, refuges for boar and wildcats from the arrows of Bretonian hunters.
Vast stretches of grey mud crawled between the islands and the deep pools of black, scummy water. Only the lightest of birds, fishers, and the web-footed cranes could navigate the mudflats with any manner of impunity. Any heavier creature would find itself gripped by an implacable grasp, pulled steadily downward into the greedy mire. There were reputed to be navigable channels through the fen, but only a handful of peasant hunters and poachers knew how to maneuver their shallow skiffs through the swamp. Between the swamp and the forest was a narrow tract of solid land. Under the orders of the Duke, that land had been undermined. Much of it crumbled away, expanding the limits of the fen, until only a slender path remained. Then the Duke had constructed a tower and his gate, demanding tribute from all who travel his road. The Duke's toll road existed for less than a year. Some said that vengeful spirits, offended by the Duke's greed, emerged from the forest and cast down his tower. Others told of some hulking atrocity, a creature of the dark gods, that lumbered out from the depths of Grimfen and reduced the fort to rubble in a frenzied attempt to slay the soldiers within. A less popular story held that the Duke's own soldiers set fire to the tower, hoping that its destruction would see an end to their lord's plans for the road, and would also see an end to what they viewed as a loathsome and intolerable posting. Brunner could see the possibility in that tale, for he could not imagine any man being able to endure the stench of the fen, much less live with it, for months at a time. Liffeline placed a thin finger on Brunner's shoulder and nodded at the road. In the distance, Brunner could see a small group of mounted figures making their way towards them. The bounty hunter sighted along the length of his crossbow, casting a sidewise look to ensure that his spare crossbow and loaded handgun were still propped against the rock at his side.
"Make out any details?"
the bounty hunter asked.
"They do not look out of the ordinary," the elf replied. "Armed peasant rabble, it would seem. None of them appear to have more than a sword and a bow upon them."
The elf paused, squinting his eyes.
"Wait," he said. "I think there may be a knight with them, though he wears no tabard, and his horse is not clothed."
The elf concentrated upon the armored rider.
"He is certainly their leader. I don't think he is Bretonian, however. His skin is too dark."
Brunner scowled, maintaining his aim. He spoke from the corner of his mouth.
"He is wearing a suit of plates, and his head is covered by a large brimmed hat. The man's face is marked by pox scars, and he wears a cavalry mace and a small crossbow at his side."
"You can see him, then?"
the elf asked, a trace of astonishment in his melodious voice.
"I certainly can't make out much," Joseph spoke.
He had tried to impress Brunner to give him one of his crossbows, but had been refused. With only the broadsword given to him by the Count of Chagnay, Joseph was feeling ill-equipped for the coming battle. He briefly thought that perhaps the bounty hunter was trying to protect him. But then he realized that Brunner was merely worried that he might announce their presence too soon if he was given a ranged weapon. There had been quite an argument when Joseph heard the bounty hunter wanted to ambush the riders and kill them all before they had time to react. To Joseph, it seemed a dastardly and despicable way to fight. The bounty hunter had snarled that the graveyards were full of men who thought battle was a nobleman's game. A smart man didn't worry about how he killed an enemy, as long as it was his enemy and not himself who felt the kiss of steel.
"The leader of those men is an Italian. It is Osorio," Brunner sighed.
"I thought you killed him," Liffeline said, watching the five riders approach.
"So did I," the bounty hunter admitted. "If he comes back from the dead again, He'll have me believing in that demon god of his.
Excuse me, interrupted Joseph, but who exactly is this Osorio? I mean, if he's trying to kill us, I'd at least like to know why.
He's a bounty hunter, Liffeline stated. Same as Brunner.
Brunner glared at Liffeline. I'm nothing like him, he spat. Osorio is a fanatic, a butchering maniac, a self-styled witch hunter in the service of Solkan, the Fist of Retribution. Brunner uttered the name of the God of Vengeance as though it had laced his tongue with foulness as he spoke it.
I understood that you worked with him once, Liffeline said, staring at the nearing riders.
Aye, 2 years ago,
the bounty hunter replied, following the elf's lead and returning his eyes to the road.
We were both hunting the demonologist, Dacosta, who was said to have relocated himself to Tabarro after fleeing the King's Guard in Magritta. We came upon one another in the demon-haunted crypt Dacosta had claimed as his new lair. We made an agreement to combine our strength against him. But after overcoming Dacosta's demons, and after my bullet had stilled the wizard's heart, Osorio turned on me, saying that the reward belonged neither to me nor him, but must be given to Solkan's temple in Remus. He tried to put a bolt through my heart, but I put my steel through his chest first. I left him there, in that forgotten crypt beneath the streets of Tabarro. I heard rumors that he survived, but I did not credit them.
Now is your chance to try again, Liffeline said.
The riders were only a few dozen yards from the heaped mound of rubble. As the elf had observed, four of them were rustic, ill-kempt Bretonian louts, rusty sword thrusts through a lope of rope tied about their waists. Each of the men had a quiver of arrows lashed across his back and a long curved Bretonian bow lashed to his saddle. They all wore tunics and breeches of homespun wool and leggings crafted from fur. Their faces were cruel, the harsh faces set in a greedy leer. The leader of the men was obviously the armored figure that rode behind them. He was clothed from shoulder to toe in a suit of dull steel-plate armor, his powerful frame seeming to strain the metal that encased it. A brutal-looking mace hung from a leather thong fastened about his wrist, while a small compact crossbow was fitted to an iron hoop on his belt. The man's height was further emphasized by the tower-like broad-brimmed brown hat that clothed his head. His features were dark, baked to a leather-like consistency by the hot Estalian sun. Crater-like scars littered his face, remnants of a childhood pox. The man's eyes were dark green, with a low, hairy brow. A crooked nose, like the bent beak of a hawk, dominated the hardened features. Brunner stared at his one-time ally and fingered the trigger of his crossbow. He saw the other bounty hunter's eyes narrow with suspicion as he and his men drew closer to the heap of rubble. As soon as Brunner saw the stallion pull back on his mount's reins, he fired. The bolt caught the horse in the neck, pitching the wounded animal sidewise and carrying itself and its rider into the black morass of the fen. Even as the horse's cry of terror and death sounded, Liffeline leapt up from concealment and sent an arrow through the face of the foremost Bretonian. The man did not even gasp as he fell from his horse, his body crashing into the dust. Before any of his comrades could react, a second arrow was already knocked and fired, pitching a second rider from his saddle, with an arrow through his chest. Brunner retrieved his handgun and aimed it down at the last riders. The weapon discharged its deadly missile with a loud explosion. The roar and boom of the gun caused the Bretonians' horses to rear upwards in fright and terror. One of the men was thrown screaming into the black water. The other clung desperately to the neck of his animal as the animal raced past the mound of rubble.
Brunner sighted his other crossbow at the fleeing man, but as he did so, he saw the hands gripping the horse go slack and the rider fall. The gory wound, caused by the bounty hunter's ball, wept from the Bretonian's chest. A shriek of anguish rose from the fen as the last Bretonian struggled upward from the mire. A brown leathery mass, the size of a fist, was stuck to the man's face, and Joseph watched in horror as the Bretonian's hand ripped the giant leech off, pulling away a round chunk of his own cheek. Liffeline did not hesitate, but sent an arrow into the fen. The Bretonian was knocked from his feet and sloshed backwards as the arrow hit him. As the dead man's body rolled over in the water, a half-dozen leathery bubbles of flesh could be seen clinging to his back. A whistling sound caused Brunner to spin around. As he did so, a crossbow bolt smacked into a stone block a few feet away. The bounty hunter could see Osorio throw the spent weapon away from him. The stallion's armor was dripping with slime, and he was having difficulty moving through the mire. The brown hat was gone, and blood flowed from a wound in the man's scalp, where he had torn one of the rapacious leeches from his body. As Osorio sloshed his way forward, he wiped his mailed hand across his brow, trying to keep the blood out of his eyes.
"You faithless spawn of a maggot!"
the stallion cried out.
"Face me, Brunner! We'll fight for the dagger!"
Brunner stared down at the enraged killer, maintaining a stony silence.
"I know all about it. I spoke with Gobineau's brother."
Osorio paused, breathing heavily. His violent fall into the fen was making breathing difficult. The stallion paused, gathering his strength.
"You are not worthy to face the Black Prince,"
Osorio screamed.
"I told you,"
Liffeline smirked. Brunner shook his head.
"Face me like a man, Brunner, you bastard!"
roared Osorio, sloshing his way forward, the cavalry mace gripped in his right hand. Brunner lifted the crossbow and aimed it down at the stallion.
"I would," the bounty hunter sneered, "if I was challenged by a man and not by a dog."
Brunner fired, the bolt smashing through the dented armor above Osorio's knee. The stallion screamed, pitching forward into the foul, dark water. A steady stream of obscenities rose from the fen.
"I only hope that you don't make the leeches and crows sick,"
Brunner said, turning away.
"You're not going to leave him like that?"
Joseph asked, horrified.
"At least put him out of his misery."
Brunner fixed an icy glare upon the youth.
"Don't ever tell me my business again, boy."
Brunner pointed a gloved hand to where they had hidden their horses. Joseph could see that Liffeline had already mounted the magnificent roan stallion that he had called from the forest when they had ridden from their camp that morning.
"Mount up. I want to make paravan before nightfall."
Brunner pushed Joseph ahead of him as he gathered up his weapons and strode toward the horses. Behind them, Joseph could hear another cry of rage sound from the morass of Grim Fen.
"We've wasted enough time here," Brunner said.
The bounty hunter's jaw was set, and Joseph fancied that he saw a look of dreadful satisfaction in the eyes that peered out from behind the visor. The shadows stretched across the high-ceilinged hall, as though trying to grasp at the chamber's sole occupant. For long hours, the thin figure upon the black throne had sat immobile, staring intently at the faintly glowing contents of the box he was clutching. A sound like chimes brought Jalaif's attention away from the fascinating scene he had witnessed within the eye of Char. Even his dark heart was filled with a certain sense of admiration for the ruthlessness of the bounty hunter, however crude his methods. The Black Prince hesitated for a moment, then closed the lid of the teakwood box. The chiming continued. It was familiar, a sound that recalled the halls of his castle in Lost Naggaroth. For a moment, the Dark Elf enjoyed the nostalgia, then a foul humor settled upon him. He rose from his throne, just as the two armored figures strode towards him. The slim figures bowed their heads and slapped their hands to their breasts in the manner they had been instructed, a gesture that showed due fealty and deference to a Drushai lord. The Black Prince stepped down, his dark silk, chitan, flowing about his slender figure. He looked at his lieutenants. The two virtually identical faces were so very like his own. Both elves were dressed in full armor, male acatons worn over their own somber-hued robes of silk, with breastplates of polished steel. The Black Prince reached a pale hand out, and idly played with the small steel barbs that dangled from the shoulder guards of the lieutenant's armor on delicate silver chains. He stared at the jagged, thorn-like hooks. He had not seen their like since leaving Naggaroth. Savagely, the Black Prince slapped the face of one of his minions. The lieutenant did not flinch, though his pale flesh began to color. The Black Prince smiled at his slave's resolve. He reached out with both hands, tearing the array of flesh hooks from the armor of both elves. With a contemptuous gesture, he threw the ornaments across the room.
"Where did you get those?"
the Black Prince asked.
"From Slyke, my master,"
the dark elf that had been struck answered.
"He crafted them for us," the other lieutenant added. "He said that they were the emblems of your family, that all the knights who serve our master wear them into battle."
The Black Prince stalked forward, gripping the elf's chin with his hand, digging his fingers into his delicate skin.
"Are you a knight? Are you nobles? You two mongrel curs?"
The Black Prince flung the lieutenant from him.
"If you ever forget your place again, I shall cut your tongues from your mouths and sew them to your foreheads, that all may see what becomes of ambitious fools."
The Black Prince waved his hand. Without another word, the two dark elves turned and marched from the chamber. The Black Prince watched his servants depart. What did they know of nobility? What did they know of the longest war? What did they know of Naggaroth? Only what Slake had told them. The Black Prince turned his eyes to the discarded flesh hooks, those talismans of heritage and badges of honor. They had been crafted by Slake. A feeling almost of sadness came upon the Dark Elf. Slake had been with him for many years, more years than any of his servants. The old torture master had served his own father before Dralaif had assumed mastery of his house, before the Eye of Char had shown him how to safely murder his sire and place the blame where it would benefit him most. Slake had not been a part of the events the Black Prince had foreseen in the Eye of Char. Slake had much knowledge in his old white-capped head, knowledge that could undo his master's schemes. The Dark Elf sat back in his black throne, resting his hands on the rests, sinking deep into thought. It was not how to dispose of Slake that was troubling him. It was how he should be prepared. Perhaps basted in his own blood. That might provide an interesting dining experience.